Welcome to the Budget-Minded Traveler Podcast, your source for the tips and tactics that will inspire and equip you to travel the world. And the best part? It won't break your bank. And now, the Budget-Minded Traveler herself and your host, Jackie LaLanen.
Hey everybody, what's up? Welcome to episode 38 of the Budget-Minded Traveler Podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in today. Today's episode is actually about study abroad in kind of a think outside the box sense. I talk about study abroad a lot because I've done it three times, twice with a traditional study abroad program, which in my mind entails going through, you know, my university or a university for a structured program that's either semester or year long. And I did 2 years in Costa Rica and Italy doing that. And then I also went abroad to Brazil, which was through kind of an independent program that offers classes in Portuguese. Well, actually, they do lots of that particular school does plenty of languages once you're down in Brazil. But I went there to study Portuguese and they set me up with a host family, etc. So it was still pretty structured. But what we're going to get into today with our guest, Haley Swinson, who happens to be a fellow travel blogger over at SavvyGirlTravel.com, is kind of doing it yourself. So Haley's going to tell her story about how she decided she wanted to do her master's overseas. And rather than going the traditional route of going through a regular study abroad program like what I just mentioned, she decided just to enroll straight up at a university in Scotland. So she's going to tell that story and share some advice with us about what you should be thinking about if this is on your radar and what you can expect and some things to kind of just keep in mind when you're going to be doing this. So let's go ahead and get into it with Haley. Hey, Haley Swinson, what's going on? Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Thanks for having me, Jackie.
So this is going to be a funny question. Where are you right now?
I'm in Bozeman, actually, in Montana. In your house.
Yeah, that's right. It's not often that I actually get to do in-house interviews. So I just thought that would be a fun little fact. But it's so random, too, that you are here in Bozeman right now because you and I met in Greece last October. And come to find out that you spend every winter or how often do you come?
This is the first time, actually. I'm pretty lucky in that my parents have a mountain house out here. So I've just finished my master's degree in Edinburgh and I'm kind of like, I don't know what to do next. You know, I'm working on this travel website and, just thought it would be a good place to spend a couple of months distraction free for the most part. And actually, it's kind of funny. My parents ask if I've met anyone out here. I'm like, well, I do have one friend who didn't meet out here. We met in Athens.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. It's so ironic, I think, to me, but super cool, too. So, yeah, thanks again for agreeing to share your story. Where are you actually from originally?
I'm from South Carolina, from Columbia, which is the capital. For those of you who don't know, you may have heard of it because there's Fort Jackson is there. I think it's one of the largest training bases. So we actually do get a lot of people from outside of the state coming in and out. It seems like everybody has some kind of connection to Columbia.
And so did you go to college stateside?
I did. Yeah,
your
went
undergrad.
To
yeah.
University of Richmond in Virginia. Okay. Which to me was going as far away from home as possible, a whole 6 hours north.
Was that far enough, Haley?
Gosh, I don't think so.
So what was it that made you decide to study overseas? Because that's what you're here to talk about today. Like, what did you study in undergrad and where did this idea come from?
Well, my undergraduate studies was actually in French studies. I just was good at French in high school. I've been taking it for a while, and that's what I was really passionate about. And through that, I studied abroad, actually in Paris, which was kind of a last-minute decision on my part. I was actually looking at some more exotic places, thinking about Senegal for a while.
Oh, wow. That's very exotic and different and unique.
Yeah. No, but there were some students who had gone to Senegal and had given presentations about it. It was really interesting. Of course, that was before there was so much unrest in Mali, which is one of the neighboring countries of Senegal, I believe. Anyway, so that didn't happen because I would have had to sort of design my own program. And I realized at the last minute, all my friends were going abroad and I really wanted to go that semester instead of the following semester. So I ended up going to Paris instead because there were a lot more programs that went there. Mm-hmm. But I'm really glad that I did because that was the first time I'd ever lived in a big city. Columbia, not a big city. Richmond, not really a big city. Mm-hmm. And Paris was just, you know, my first time really learning how to navigate public transportation and having, you know, all of these sort of cultural things going on all around me. And so that was really eye-opening. And
did you learn French?
Oh, yeah. Well, that was my degree, was French
right.
studies. So,
are you fluent in French?
Sorry?
Are you fluent in French?
In French. Yes, but it's been a while since I practiced. Yeah. I did manage to get, a few weeks in France, while I was abroad this past year, living in Edinburgh. I managed to swing it so that I wasn't paying rent in Edinburgh for a couple of months. Mm-hmm. And then thought, okay, well, I'll put that money towards paying rent in another country.
Yeah, of course.
On, my dissertation at the time. So, that was an interesting experience too. I hadn't spoken French consistently for a couple of years. I did live for a year in Montreal in Quebec. Mm-hmm. I can't remember if I told you that.
I don't know if I knew that.
My French had gotten a lot better and more consistent there, but my accent was also completely different. Yeah, so when I came back from Paris, I had this Parisian French accent. Mm-hmm. And then when I came back from Montreal, I had this very Quebecois kind of accent, which actually I sort of prefer. It's a little more laid back and kind of just fun to pronounce. But then I went back to France and they're all like, who are you and why are you talking this way?
Yes. Yep. You kind of get that accent from everywhere almost once, like if it's not your original mother tongue and you've learned right. it and you learn it, you pick up so many things from dialects from, you know, everywhere. Absolutely. I get that. I mean, I have that in Spanish, so I
yeah,
can
what,
relate.
What kind of Spanish did you learn?
Costa Rican, actually.
Okay,
Latin American Spanish. Yeah. Which, I mean, even within Costa Rica, it's so regional. It is mm-hmm. so regional. And so, I mean, I learned this Costa Rican Spanish and you can go, you know, one country away and a word means something completely different, you know? And so, right. but the accent's very different. I mean, most people would say that the Spanish accent has a lisp, you know, a lisp, Barcelona,
yeah.
you know, like
yeah.
we don't have that in the Latin American Spanish, which I prefer. And
yeah.
So I guess it's good to get that ear for it, you know, when you live Absolutely. In different places and you can understand it and speak it. And
It was interesting because my professors in undergrad were from all over. One of my professors was from, I want to say the Congo, but he had an African French accent. Mm-hmm. So his dialect was completely different. And then yeah. you're getting taught from, you know, people who are from all over the world and have all these different dialects. Mm-hmm. And then you go and you live in one of these Francophone countries and it's just like, I don't even, you know, I don't actually know what people, how people talk here.
Yeah. Or what I'm supposed to sound like or yeah.
Exactly.
So is that kind of what gave you the inspiration to take your master's overseas?
Right. Yeah. So I never got back to that original question.
That's okay.
Got on a bit of a tangent. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
Yes and no. So after I finished undergrad, I didn't really know what to do with my French degree. So that was when I moved to Montreal and just worked a bunch of kind of odd jobs. I stayed there. I actually, now this is kind of funny. I moved to Montreal intending to make it a permanent move. And for those of you who are interested in Canadian citizenship, it's not that hard to obtain.
Really?
So I went there and was really enthusiastic about making this my permanent home. And then it just didn't work out that way for one reason or another. And I ended up coming back. And I think part of it was because I was 22 at the time. So mm-hmm. it was just kind of like a really tumultuous time in your life. You know, you don't really know what you want. You think right. you do. But so anyway, I ended up coming back a year later and got into the film industry in costuming.
Okay.
So that was another thing, because I had been doing my French degree, which I already had a good number of credits towards from high school, I was able to pursue some other elective classes, and part of that was costuming. So I moved to North Carolina to work in film, and that lasted okay. for about a year and a half. I wasn't really enjoying my job so much, and realized that it was basically 14 hours of standing around staring at a monitor, which is
not
really
fun.
Difficult to enjoy.
So now you do it. You're just a writer.
yeah, exactly. No, you're right about that. God,
sorry, bad joke. Go ahead.
that's actually really funny. No. So I realized, you know, this really isn't the industry for me. I don't really want to be where I see all of my superiors going, you know, and their kind of lives that they're leading. So the thing that's always been big in my life has been creative writing. Like, since I was a little kid, creative writing's always been a big part of my life. So I had heard about this program in Edinburgh from a friend of a friend a couple years before, and I actually had applied to it for the fall prior to the one that I actually attended, but I had deferred. So I emailed them. I came home from my first day of work on Under the Dome and sent them an email and said, can I accept, you know, my deferral? Can I come to school this year since I deferred last year? And I got an email back. I think it took them like a week and a half to respond to me, which is kind of how things work in Edinburgh.
So that's a slow response?
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty slow. I mean, it seems slow to me.
Okay.
And they said, absolutely, you know, you're welcome to come this year. So that was in, I want to say it was like May when I emailed them. And maybe it was before that. It may have been March or April. And so then just a few months later, I was on a plane. So in August, I was on a plane to go live and study in Edinburgh, and I'd never even been there before. But that's kind of how I do things. I just kind of pick a place sometimes. And that's what happened with Montreal. I wanted to go somewhere that was French speaking so I could practice French. It was nice that it was in the same time zone as my hometown, and I'd never been there, so I just kind of packed up and left. And that's what I did with Edinburgh. And part of the reason why I chose Edinburgh, besides the fact that they were willing to accept me after having deferred, is that I'm really interested in travel writing as well. And I thought Edinburgh would be a good place to sort of have as a home base and travel out from to write about your other European countries and more interesting places than, you know.
So let's talk about the process of you basically getting accepted and that application, because you made it sound really simple, and maybe it was, but did you just, I mean, you heard about this program through someone, and did you just go online and just apply for it? And that was it. I mean, did it cost anything to apply?
Actually, it didn't. See, the school system in Scotland for Scottish citizens, is free for 4 years, and I assume that probably has the impact on how much it costs to apply, which is nothing.
Okay.
It's free to apply, at least to University of Edinburgh. I that's the only school I applied to in the UK, so I'm not sure about other schools, but I would assume, just going off of what I know of the Scottish school system, probably Scottish schools don't charge the application fees, which is really nice because application fees can get really expensive.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, people spend incredible amounts just applying for schools and even like going around and visiting them. And I mean, no, you're not going to really do that with Scotland before you just make the move over there. But what about, so once you got accepted, then how did they help you at all with, I mean, like did you get a visa? Did you get a student visa? What happened there?
I'm trying to think back. I did have to get a student visa. It's called a tier 4 visa, I believe.
And did they help you with that? Or did they say, this is what you need? Or did you, because you were kind of on your own. I mean, you applied to this school. You weren't applying to a study abroad program. And so you were solo in this. Did they basically expect that you would take care of this stuff?
And you know, I hate to say it, I don't really remember. Since I had gone through the visa process before, first with France and then with Canada, I don't remember it being that big of a deal. Actually, now I do remember. No, I had to go through all of that on my own. And I didn't really realize how long it can take for a visa to come in. So I ended up, because you have to, in some instances, drive to another city.
Yeah.
And actually, I was listening to this on one of your other podcasts. You were talking about visas. Yeah. I think the Brazil visa or something. Anyway, yeah. And so I sort of waited longer than I should have to apply for the visa.
Okay.
And the other thing, what happened to me with France, my passport was about to expire and I didn't realize it. So it was going to expire before I finished my study abroad there. So I actually had to apply to renew my passport before I applied for the visa. So that was just an even more complicated process. And ultimately, I believe with the Edinburgh visa, I don't think I expedited the service, but I did send them an overnight return envelope because I had to mail it to New York, I believe.
Okay.
Once I had gone through these other steps where I had to drive to, I think I drove to Raleigh in North Carolina because I was living in Wilmington at the time. And I had to get my fingerprints taken and all this stuff. And then from there, had to send it off to New York. And I was under the impression originally that I was going to get my visa in Raleigh. So that's why I had to send them the overnight envelope. And I got my visa, I think, something like 4 or 5 days before I got on the plane.
Oh, that is so scary.
It was very nerve-wracking.
So just for any of you guys listening who are completely lost about this process right now, when you get a visa, you do have to, you're in a jurisdiction is basically what we're talking about. So like, for example, I think that this is ridiculous, but I think that the entire state of Montana, our jurisdiction can often be like LA or something ridiculous. Like what you were saying, when I went to Brazil, I had to go to San Francisco to get it. I once had to go to Vegas. And it really depends on where you're living and where the consulate has jurisdiction. And so that's why you would have to go somewhere to fill out the paperwork, meet with the consulate, whatever it is that you have to do. And then you also have the option of sending them, you have to pay for the postage back. And so you can send that's what she's saying. You can send an overnight envelope for them that you've paid for them to put your stuff in and get back to you like as soon as possible. So it's probably a good deal that you did that. was worth it, huh?
Yeah, it was. I mean, and that was a lot cheaper because when I got my French visa, we had to pay the expedition. We had to expedite the process, which was something like $100 more. Whereas just buying the overnight envelope, probably cost me like $20, but was still an expense. I shouldn't have had to think about if I had planned ahead better.
Right. Do you remember how much it cost for the visa?
I hate to say I don't.
Yeah, they're all different. I don't know. I don't really remember mine either. So.
The Canadian visa, I think, was the cheapest one, though. And it was kind of funny because, my first visa from France, it's got, you know, this really cool sort of holograph thing that goes into the passport. It looks really neat.
Yeah.
And then when I got my Canadian visa, they stapled a piece of paper to my passport.
Mm-hmm.
And it just like folded out. It was really ghetto looking.
That's pretty funny.
But the UK visa was, you know, the cool stamp and everything again. But maybe that's why the Canadian visa didn't cost as much. I also got it at the border. So I went with all my credentials and...
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, so... Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to continue on, like, past the visa. So once you had that taken care of and you were ready to go... So did you know it was going to be... Well, obviously you did. It was only going to be 1 year, right? Is that right?
Right. Yes. So that was another reason why I chose to go to Edinburgh. Because most... Sorry, my program was in creative writing. I don't think I mentioned that before. And most creative writing degrees in the U.S. are MFAs, Masters of Fine Arts, and they're usually between 2 and 3 years, and sometimes longer than that.
Wow.
And they can be just as expensive as undergraduate degrees sometimes, depending on where you go and what kind of scholarships you get, et cetera, et cetera. So with Edinburgh being only 1 year, that was another plus, because I wasn't, you know, this was something that I had been doing for most of my life, but wasn't 100% sure I could make a career out of.
Yeah.
So I kind of wanted to dip my toes into it and not commit to three years of more school, which, ironically, I'm now kind of committing to another 2 or 3 years of school, hopefully this fall. I've just sent in more applications. But I will say another thing about attending school abroad that's not study abroad.
Mm-hmm.
If you are applying to more school after that, you have to get your transcripts assessed by a third party, which I had to do in order to apply to more school for next fall. And it costs between... like $180 to $300 to get that done.
Wow.
And I did not anticipate that cost at all.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something to keep in mind for sure.
That's interesting. So did you have a chance for scholarships going overseas? I mean, was there anything that you could have done for that?
I hate to say it, but there really aren't that many scholarship opportunities for, especially for international students. There are a lot for EU students for Edinburgh. And they have, I think they had one scholarship that was given in retrospect. So at the end of the year, to one student in among our group.
Oh,
but
and you didn't get it.
No. I
dang
didn't.
It.
I was not that one overachiever.
Oh, bummer.
Cause
that can, how much was it? I mean,
it
schools vary so much, but.
Well, it was about $13,000. Dollars.
Okay.
Which was still...
For the whole year?
Yeah, for the whole year of schooling, which is still not, you know, $40,000 a year, which of private universities here charge, but it's still not, you know, it's a good chunk of change as well.
Yeah, definitely. But it doesn't seem, I mean, that surprises me, honestly, because so many universities stateside are just ridiculously expensive.
Absolutely.
And
well, that's the other thing I was saying before. Scottish schools are free for Scottish students.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a much different system over there than we do here. And that said, I think I went into that school system expecting more of what I experienced in undergraduate, and it was not like that at all, because they put, I don't know everything about the system, obviously, but I'm kind of making some educated guesses here based on what I've experienced there and what I've heard, you know. But it seems as if they put a lot more pressure on the professors to do a lot more different things. They're not as focused. So my creative writing professors were also teaching undergraduates, and they're also teaching literature classes, mm-hmm. and they're also, you know, personal tutors for students. And so they're wearing all of these different hats, and mm-hmm. it doesn't seem like they're being paid enough, and they're not being paid nearly as much as professors get paid over here. Hmm. And we still hear, you know, complaints from our professors here saying that they're not getting paid enough. And so it's harder to get the same level of attention from a professor, at least at a university as large as University of Edinburgh. And as you would at a small private university, that you're paying $40,000 a year to attend. So that's, I mean, that's another thing you kind of have to think about is if you're considering going abroad for a degree, well, what are your priorities? And for me, one of my priorities was to be in a foreign city. And
yep. So
that sort of outweighed some of the potential negatives, I guess.
Yeah, no kidding. I would have been like, I don't really care what you're teaching. I'll take it. Just get me there, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
But that's actually a really good piece of advice, I think, to make sure that you know what the school system is going to be like, that you're not going to be expecting that attention if you're not going to get it. I think that's really important.
Right.
To weigh if you're considering studying overseas, just in a traditional program like what you did. I just think it's so cool that you did it like on your own, you know, just decided to go to Scotland for your master's and, you know, got your visa and just made it work. Where did you live? Did you live in student housing or?
Actually, believe it or not, student housing was pretty expensive compared to, you know, just finding a place on my own. So I ended up in a flat share with three other students.
Mm-hmm. Were they all Scottish?
I had found, well, let's see. Two were Scottish and one was English.
Okay.
Which was also nice because, you know, they were students who weren't in my program. And they actually, only one of them was even going to University of Edinburgh. The other one was at a different university. And then the third, I think he had just finished or was finishing. So I kind of got more diversity in a way. And got to have a different group outside of my very small program group.
Right.
It's nice.
Which is important when you're in a foreign country because you need to experience as much as you can. And especially to have kind of built-in friends. I mean, hopefully you got along with these people. And that's really helpful when you travel somewhere by yourself. It can be hard to make friends. I mean, at least people spoke English there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's debatable, but no. I mean, it's funny because, you know, my dad likes to tell this story about when he and my mom went on some trip to the UK, you know, before they had kids. And he said he was booking everything over the phone and he'd been booking the trip through Scotland and was having such a hard time understanding them that when he was next speaking to someone from England, he made the mistake of saying, "Oh my gosh, I'm so glad I'm finally talking to an American again."
Oh, geez.
And they got so offended. But it's true though. I mean, some Scottish people do have very strong accents.
And oh yeah. Yeah.
But mm-hmm. I have gotten the question from people, who are considering studying abroad, will it be difficult to understand my professors? Like, well, these are people who are academics, you know, and academics tend to have a certain clarity about their speech, generally speaking. So I don't think that's something you really need to take into account too much when considering studying abroad in an English-speaking country, despite an accent.
That's also a good point. I wouldn't have even thought about that. So was you actually received a degree, right? You graduated from this program?
Yes. And now, strangely enough, my degree in creative writing is a master's in science.
You mean according to U.S. schools or according to the University of Edinburgh?
That's the degree I received from the University of Edinburgh. So actually, the equivalent, when I did get my transcript evaluated by the third party, the equivalent is Masters of Arts.
Okay.
But in at the University of Edinburgh, they have an undergraduate program that is 4 years, I think. So if I'm thinking correctly, I believe that an undergraduate degree in Scotland is only 3 years long, but you can opt to take a fourth year. And apparently, and I could be getting this completely wrong. This is my understanding. And apparently they already had a program that was a Master's of Arts, that was a four-year program, and so they didn't want to call this program Master's of Arts because it's, you know, technically a higher degree than what that was. So I don't know what their reasoning for choosing Master's of Science was, but it was mostly to differentiate it from that other degree.
Well, now you can say you have both.
Yeah.
So is that, because I was going to ask you, basically, how is your degree recognized here? Like, you know, there are so many, I don't know, things about being accredited university or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, is that an issue, or is that where that third party comes in to say, yes, we are establishing, you know, that this is worthy of whatever, you know?
No, that's exactly it, is that if you have a degree from a school outside of the U.S., I would assume probably Canada is not included in international, because I think our education system is fairly similar to the Canadian one. But you have to go through this third party to evaluate it, which was really funny to me because the University of Edinburgh last year got ranked as like the 17th best university in the world.
Wow.
And yeah, and it's something like the fourth oldest in Europe universities. And then you're going, yeah, okay, I got to approve that the University of Edinburgh is accredited and
yeah,
my degree is legitimate. It's just, it seems a little ridiculous. But it's also because the grading system is different. So, okay, so this kind of blew my mind while I was there. A good grade in the UK system is a 70. And it's out of 100, but for some reason an A is a 70 or above. And a B is in the 60s, and a C is in the 50s. And so when I got my first paper back and it was like high 60s, I almost had a heart attack.
Yeah, no kidding. Whoa. And, that seems really strange.
It is very strange. And you know, the French do a similar thing, because when I was in Paris, I took some classes through the organization I went, and then I also was able to take two outside classes at the Sorbonne. And they grade, I think, yeah, it's out of 20, I believe. And then, but the percentage doesn't make sense, because a 14 out of 20 is a good grade, or at least a decent grade from what I recall.
Mm-hmm.
And anything like 11 and above is passing. So that doesn't make sense though, percentage wise, because 11, you know, would be a little over 50%. And here that's huge fail.
So maybe if people are used to getting not so good grades, they should go to Europe. And they fine.
just change that you're not in the right country, I guess. But that, I mean, I think that's the main reason why you have to go through this third party, so that whoever's considering you for admission for your next degree, or if you're applying for a job that requires a certain GPA, if that even happens anymore,
yeah.
It's so that they can understand the grading scale and
right,
and also the equivalent degree that we have here.
That does make sense. And actually brings up another question. When you were applying, was there any, did you have to have taken any graduate level testing, or, you know, doing anything like that? Or did you have to prove your academics to get into the University of Edinburgh?
They did ask for my grade point average, and I supplied that. And I sent them my transcript, although they accepted just a scanned copy of the transcript, which was interesting.
It seems like it was pretty easy.
It was.
Like, way easier than applying for an American grad school.
Yeah, I would say so. And I'm trying to remember, I did take the GRE. I don't think they required the scores, though.
Hmm.
But it's also a little bit different with creative writing programs.
Okay.
Just because so much of the application is based on your writing sample.
Okay.
A lot of creative writing MFAs here don't require the GRE either. Just because there is less focus on the grade and much more so on the quality of the writing. If that makes sense.
Yeah. Based on the experience that you had, the entire thing from the application, the visa, studying over there, how much it cost you, just everything. Is it something you would recommend that other people try?
Yes, with some sort of, not really stipulations, but with at least the understanding of kind of what your goals are for going and what you are placing the most weight on, like what's most important to you. I think just living abroad for a year, even if you're not going to school, maybe you're volunteering or moving to Canada and working in random places for a year. Having that experience of another culture, and believe it or not, the UK is another culture. It is so different.
Oh, yeah.
It changes you in a way that it's hard to really explain. And it makes you appreciate the things that you have at home. And it also helps you to realize what you take for granted and, you know, maybe some things that other countries do that you'd like to kind of add into your own life routine, I guess.
Definitely.
Just for example, in Edinburgh, they have something like 4 different kinds of recycling and they all get picked up. You know, it's all service. So we had composting and, you know, they recycle all of the glass and the tin and plastic and all these things. I know there are some cities in the U.S. that do that, but it's they're few and far between. And especially with the composting, and they have a service that comes to your house that picks up your compost bin once a week, you know,
that's
just something that blew my mind.
That's so cool. And
you get into these little habits and it's really interesting taking bits of different cultures and kind of adding them to your own personal lifestyle.
Definitely.
And I think one of the most interesting things is seeing how other countries view your country from that country. So, you know, obviously I'm hearing a lot from my Scottish and English roommates how their experiences with the US are and Americans, and then also hearing from those British news sources and just seeing how we're portrayed in the media in other countries. It's not all bad. It just gives you a totally different perspective.
Yeah.
Own country, you know, where you're from and how you grew up versus where other people are from, how they grew up, and how our culture is reflected in other parts of the world. And that's a perspective you just can't get without without really living somewhere for a long time outside of your own country.
Right. This is a classic. It really is kind of one of the classic lessons of studying abroad, you know, and when you're talking about how seeing how another country portrays the U.S. in the media, I was thinking, or doesn't, you know, it's like, we're not the center of the world and no, people aren't always talking about us. Like, it's not all about the USA all the time. You know, people could care less about what's going on over here. And I mean, you don't hear about the States just as much as, you know, as you would assume that you would hear about it. You don't. It's just there. No one cares. Like, it's not an issue. And so definitely, like, completely removing yourself from that entire environment is really interesting. And yeah, I mean, that can be attained, I guess, by, you know, any kind of study abroad or living overseas. Just once you're out for long enough, that's one of the things that you learn. And it's pretty cool.
And you know, sorry to keep dragging on here, but
that's okay.
One of the things that that really, really struck me in the UK is how, you know, what they place the most importance on in their lives. You know, here we're such a capitalist society, and it's all about how well you can do in work and how much you can kind of move up the ranks and how much you can earn. And in the UK, it's a lot more family focused. They're able, like one of my roommates got an internship with a law firm right after finishing law school, which, another interesting thing, law school in the UK is actually an alternative to undergraduate. So he was 21 and just finishing law school.
Wow.
So he got an 11-month internship with a law firm and already had 20 vacation days. And it's just like, that's unheard of here, you know? And there's so much more emphasis in the UK on taking care of yourself, having that work-life-family balance, and a much more healthy self-image. I mean, you do not see the same kind of photoshopped people in advertisements in the UK, which I didn't really realize how much we Photoshop our advertisements here until going to the UK, because you see pictures of, and it's not just, I'm not just talking about magazines, but like, you know, bank advertisements, grocery store advertisements, any pictures of people. And here they're all like perfect skin and perfect white teeth, and they're all thin and healthy looking, and, you know, all of their hair. And in the UK, they just show normal people. You know?
What? No. Like, what are those? I don't know what that looks like. Yeah.
It's so much healthier, because then there's none of this kind of fanaticism about, I have to go to the gym every day, I have to look perfect. There's just a much healthier mindset of, my favorite UK term, hill walking, which is, they don't use the word hiking. They say hill walking. And it's a little bit of a misnomer, because, you know, a friend will say, hey, I'm going to go hill walking tomorrow. And you go and you're like hiking up this crazy mountain. I thought we were hill walking.
Yeah.
So they just have this more sort of outdoors and healthy attitude about things that doesn't require you to become a gym fanatic to stay healthy.
Right.
Which, of course, you know, obesity is also a problem in the UK, but it just seems like the mentality is not the same as it is here in the US.
Yeah. You know what's interesting? You just made me think of, I mean, when I was living in Brazil, I noticed, because you think of Brazil, you think of a Brazilian beach, like, what comes to your mind?
Beautiful model.
Yeah, with a thong on, right?
Oh, yeah.
And it's funny because everyone does wear thong bathing suits there.
Really?
Like, oh yeah, everyone. And what's so great about that is that there's no, like, it doesn't matter if the person is overweight or not, or, you know, not the most perfect person on the beach. It doesn't matter. Like, everyone, and no one is like staring or turning heads or anything. It's just normal. Like, it's just what they do. And it's like they don't care, you know, and there's such a big thing. We're totally on a tangent right now. I'm realizing.
But it's great. And it's true, though. It just goes back to saying,
these are the things that you learn when you live overseas.
I mean,
these are the things that you can open your eyes to that happen in the world.
And just accepting that other countries go about their lives in a different way than you do. And that's fine. You know, it kind of makes you realize that there's more than one acceptable way to live your life.
Definitely. That's a really good way to put it. I love that. Well, this has been great.
Yeah.
I love that you just kind of introduced another, you know, it's kind of like an out of the box way, even though it seems like it would be really logical, but I don't think that as American citizens, our mind goes there, that like you can just straight up apply for another university in another country. And I love that you did that, and like that we were able to kind of introduce that today, because especially at a graduate level, I know there are a lot of people who just aren't in their 20s who are looking at doing, you know, grad school or more schooling or something. You know, they go back to school, and this is another awesome way for you to get overseas. If you're considering studying something, you know, take it overseas. You can do it yourself. You don't have to do a study abroad program. And even then, you might not have to get it accredited, which is that extra cost at the end. You know,
I mean,
I think it's great. So thank you so much for sharing with us.
Absolutely. And one last little note here is, I will say, though, before you apply for a school overseas, like I was saying before, determine what your goals are.
Mm-hmm.
And if one of your goals is to come back to the U.S., you kind of have to weigh, you know, are you trying to get into a certain industry here? Because what I found with my degree, my visa expired, obviously, at the end of my year there. And all of my connections that I'd made in the writing and literary world were all in the UK.
Right.
So now it's kind of like starting over, which is why I'm considering another degree, in the U.S., which will hopefully be paid for. And so, you know, if you're trying to go somewhere and live there permanently, it's a good, obviously you're going to be making your connections there, but you also have to consider some of the drawbacks, like how difficult it is to get a long-term visa in the UK. Actually, if that's a track you want to take, it's a lot easier to get one if you have a PhD than just a master's. But that's obviously more schooling.
yeah.
So anyway, I won't keep you any longer, but just wanted to add that little note on.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. Obviously spoken from experience. So listen to Haley, people. So one last thing I just wanted to, we didn't talk about this at all, but I know that you also run a travel website, travel blog, travel magazine. And I know that that's where people can find you. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, so the magazine is called Savvy Girl Travel. It's sort of a blog magazine type website. It does have multiple writers, which is why I tend to call it more of a magazine, because it's not just focused on me. Mm-hmm. But it's specifically geared towards female travelers, especially long-term travelers, expats. A lot of the writers are actually from my program.
Oh, cool.
So that's kind of how I got it started. I actually started it last September. So September 2014. And basically coerced all of my friends from the program to write for me.
That's great, though. At least you know you have quality people if they were all getting their master's in creative writing.
Exactly. No, and right now I've got two girls who are writing monthly for me. So I've got a number of writers who are just kind of contributing here and there. And two of them, one is Canadian, who lives in Vancouver. And then another one is Spanish, who lives in Madrid.
Cool.
And then I'm in Montana, so I'm kind of in somewhere in the middle. But anyway, so we've got a wide range of articles on there. So it's savvygirltravel.com.
Okay.
You can find me there.
Awesome. I want to put links to your stuff and social media and that website on the show notes page, so people can find you if they want to say hi or follow you, because you have stories and pictures and everything from all over the world. So
yeah, and if anybody wants to ask specific questions about University of Edinburgh or the creative writing program, or you know, just studying, getting a degree abroad, not just studying abroad, feel free to send me an email. All my contact information is on savvygirltravel.com.
Okay.
And I'd be perfectly willing to help in any way that I can. So
that's so awesome. Thank you so much for that.
Of course.
Well, yeah, this has been great. And I really appreciate you coming on today. Thank you so much. And we will talk to you again soon.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Jackie.
All right. I hope you guys enjoyed that interview with Haley Swinson, and hopefully you got some ideas around kind of forming your own study abroad experience, if that is something that appeals to you. And just to reiterate Haley's advice, you know, just make sure you know what your goals are going into it. I think that's the best piece of advice she could have given, really, because if the point is to get overseas and study at the same time, it's kind of perfect because it could save you a lot of money. But you don't come with automatic friends like you can with a traditional study abroad program. I mean, there are definitely things that you need to weigh there. So make sure you know what your goals are, what's most important to you. And thank you again to Haley for sharing all of that with us. And so there is a show notes page for this episode, as always, at thebudgetmindedtraveler.com/38. And I am going to include a link there to my resource page on my website that covers passports and visas. It's very helpful. It's full of any link that you could possibly need to find out what you would need for visas, you can find through that page. And so I'm just going to put that there for convenience. It's one of those pages that I myself check all the time, because those websites can be really difficult to navigate. So just check out that page on my website. You can actually get there by going to thebudgetmindedtraveler.com/passports as well. So if that's helpful to you, then that's great. That's there for you to use. And definitely take advantage of, if you have any questions for Haley, she's probably going to be active in the comments and you can email her. We're going to have her contact information and social media, etc., on the show notes page as well. So I hope you guys enjoyed this interview. That's it for now. And we'll see you in the next one. Thanks a lot.